This is Victoria's Fall Study Day, November 2011. Our speaker is Brother David Lawrence from Prince George on the speaking to the theme of turning points. This is our second class on Nadab and Abihu, it's entitled, and the reading we did for this class to introduce it is Leviticus 10, verses 1 to 11. Brother David, please.
This turning point might not seem quite as cataclysmic and as stunning as the flood. We're dealing with two boys, Nadab and Abihu. And we want to see how this turning point affected the nation, how it affected Aaron, and how it affected his family. We get turning points in our lives which maybe don't affect the rest of our brothers and sisters, that don't affect the society that we're in. But boy, do they knock your feet out from under you. This event that we're going to look at with Nadab and Abihu was a real turning point in the life of the nation, in the life of Aaron, and in his family. And we want to try and draw lessons from that to see how it affected these characters which are portrayed before us, what we can learn from it, and what we can perhaps do differently or do better. So that's our second turning point that we'd like to look at, is Nadab and Abihu, which is going to make major changes in the family of the priesthood, of Aaron and his family. And that's really what we want to try and focus on. I'd like to start by putting together some of the family background of Moses and Aaron and their children. I'd like you to start looking in Exodus chapter 6. In Exodus chapter 6, we have a little bit of the background of the pieces are the family of Moses and Aaron of their children together. The first verse that I'd like us to look at is verse 23, and Aaron took him Eliasheba, daughter of Aminadab, sister to Naasson, to wife, and she bare him Nadab and Abihu, Eleazar and Ithamar. So Aaron has four sons. Now we are going to consider in this class together the death of his firstborn and the next one. Nadab and Abihu are going to die. And so the only two that are left are going to be Eleazar and Ithamar. So the workload of the priesthood is going to be on their shoulders. And that load is going to be passed down upon them. Now, as we look at this, you see now that Aaron has four sons. So we now know that we're not dealing with a huge family. Had four sons. And two of them are going to die, so the other two sons are going to bear the impact. So you know that Moses and Aaron are of the tribe of Levi. They're Levites. They come from the tribe of Levi. We also know that they are of the family in the tribe of Levi of Kohath. They come from Kohath. So if you're still in chapter 6 of Exodus, look at verse 16, Exodus chapter 6 and verse 16. These are the names of the sons of Levi according to their generations. Gershom, Kohath, Merari. And the years of the life of Levi were 137 years. So there's a little bit of the descendants that we have here. Gershom, Kohath, and Merari. Now we're going to find that Moses and Aaron come through Kohath. That's where their family tree comes down. Skip down to verse 18, Exodus chapter 6 and verse 18. The sons of Kohath, we've seen the three sons of Levi. They were the sons of Kohath were Amram, Izhar, Hebron, and Aziel. And the years of the life of Kohath were 133 years. So never mind how long they lived particularly, but look at how the family line goes down. So we now have the sons of Kohath. So we're looking at this family of Kohath. We've got Amram, Izhar, Hebron, and Aziel. Now, as we continue down to verse 20, this is what we read. That Amram took him Jochebed, his father's sister, to wife, and she bare him Aaron, Moses. And the years of the life of Amram were 137 years. So you'll see how the family tree goes down from Levi through Kohath, and then we come down to Moses and Aaron. It doesn't mention Miriam in there, but also Miriam is part of the family here. But that's how the family tree, the links, go together. Now, we find in chapter 7 that Aaron was older than Moses. In fact, chapter 7 and verse 7, this doesn't kind of tell you when they were born or whatever, but you can deduce from verse 7 how much older Aaron was than Moses. Moses was 80 years old, and Aaron, 83 years old, when they spake unto Pharaoh. So this was a point in their life when they go into Pharaoh and they speak to him. And we are told that Aaron is 3 years older than Moses. Moses is 80, and Aaron's 83. So we know that no matter how actually old they were, there were 3 years between them. So Aaron, if you like, was Moses' older brother. He was older than Moses. Now, that's just a point to store away there, because how is the interaction and the dynamic going to work between these people as they start going into the wilderness? One other thing I'd like us to notice is Aaron dies in the 40th year as they have come out of Egypt. And the place I'd like you to look at is Numbers chapter 33, where we find out kind of when Aaron dies. And hopefully from this you can see, because we're going to see that the events we're going to look at are compressed quite closely to the time when they have come out of Egypt. We're going to look at chapter 33, Numbers chapter 33, and verse 38. I should get over the page into 33. It always works better if you're in the right chapter. Verse 38 of Numbers chapter 33. And Aaron, the priest, went up into Mount Hor at the commandment of the Lord and died there in the 40th year after the children of Israel were come out of the land of Egypt, in the first day of the fifth month. So very, very clearly we're told that it's the 40th year after they've come out of Egypt. Specific month, specific day, and that is when Aaron dies. So we know when he dies, okay, it's the 40th year after they've come out of the land of Egypt. So, it's quite clear. We don't have to worry about, trying to get it clearer than that. And verse 39, and Aaron was 123 years old when he died in Mount Hor. So that's the death of Aaron. Now, the turning point we want to consider, the death of Nadab and Abihu, takes place very close to their exit from Egypt. It's not right at the end of the wilderness wanderings. It's right near the beginning of the wilderness wanderings. So these events are kind of hanging over you all the way through the wilderness. The death of your firstborn son and the next one are right near the beginning. So that's an awful weight. You are not supposed to die kind of before your children. And you're not, to witness the death of your children, it must have been an awful burden that Aaron had to carry through the wilderness wanderings. All the events that we read of in the books of Exodus and Numbers and Leviticus, all these events that we're going to consider, all the way through, all these things when they're happening, these are the things which have happened. The death of Nadab and Abihu right at the beginning. And it gives us a different flavor. Sometimes you'll meet somebody and you really don't know much about their background and you kind of question things. Well, why are they this way? Why are they doing that? And later on you find something, some major event which has happened in their life which has flavored them. I was born in 43. My father died in 47. My mother came to Canada in 49. I was a rotten kid, because my mother had lost her husband, she had no other children, and I was a rotten kid. You know, I was going to do it I was not. My mother, you know, says, look, this is black. And I would say, no, that's white. In other words, I was totally contrary. Now, you don't notice that when you're a kid. You know, you do what you want to do. But later on, you look back and you think, boy, was I a pain. You know, my poor old mother, you know, she was dealing with me. I thought she had. You know, she'd lost her husband. He's died. She's got me. And you want your child. You know, you do all the best for your child. And he's a rotter. You know, he doesn't want to do anything that you want him to do. Now, you don't appreciate that when you're a kid. You talk about perspectives. You look back and you realize, you look at your old man or your old, you know, your mom or whatever, and you get a different perspective as you get, you know, you mentally kind of do little age calculations. When I was so-and-so, how old was my mother? Oh, boy. And then you realize that some of the events that have taken place, and it gives you a different perspective. Well, we're going to look at Aaron, and we're going to see Moses and Aaron all through the wilderness wanderings. Well, this event of the death of Nadab and Abihu are going to flavor the way that they feel. Maybe it doesn't really come out in the record, but just try and get that dynamic that's working in their lives as we go through this this little section. So we've got the death of Aaron now in the 40th year. And we've seen a little bit of the family history as to how they're related and how they work together. And this cloud of the death of your children before you in the life of Aaron are going to hang heavy on the events which are going to take place with the wilderness wandering. I would like to look at the excuses that Moses makes when God asks him to lead the children of Israel out of Egypt. I'd like us to go to chapter 4, Exodus chapter 4, just to see these events, to see how this family dynamic is going to start to work out. Basically between Moses and Aaron. Chapter 4 and verse 13. Chapter 4 and verse 13. These excuses kind of run all the way through chapter 4. The first one, it right starts at the beginning of chapter 4, just to kind of scan through it, as it were. You know, Moses answered and said, behold, you know, they won't believe me. I can't do this. This is not a job for me. And when you come down to verse 10, you can see again, Moses said unto the Lord, oh, my Lord, I'm not an eloquent man. I can't do this. You know, I'm not up to this. And all the way through here, he's making excuses. Specifically, we're going to just start at verse 13, Exodus chapter 4 and verse 13. And he said, oh, my Lord, send, I pray thee, by the hand of him whom thou wilt send. And the anger of the Lord was kindled against Moses. And he said, is not Aaron the Levite thy brother? I know that he can speak well. And also, behold, he cometh forth to meet thee. And when he cometh, and when he seeth thee, he will be glad to in his heart. And thou shalt speak unto him, and put words in his mouth. And I will be with thy mouth, and with his mouth, and will teach you what you shall do. And he shall be thy spokesman unto the people. And he shall be to thee instead of a mouth, and thou shalt be to him instead of God. So Moses makes all these excuses in the beginning of Exodus chapter 4. And in the end, God says, he was angry. He says, look, I know Moses can talk. You say you can't speak. You're not an eloquent person. Well, I tell you what, you're going to be like God to your older brother, and you're going to tell him what to say, and he's going to say it. And that's how the dynamic is going to work between you two. Now, we are told also in the record, I think it's in Numbers, that Moses was the meekest of all men. He was not a fellow that pushed himself forward. Now, the fellow that's going to accept this role as the spokesman is going to be Aaron. And it's kind of difficult when you're the mouthpiece. You know, as I mentioned in our first class there, I have a problem with talking. I talk too much. And some of us do. You babble on at the mouth. And there's a nice little PS at the end of the Testimony magazine for this month by Brother Mark Vincent. And there's a little thing that he had seen, that his daughter had seen. And I can't remember exactly what this little plaque was that he said. But in a nutshell, it says, Lord, help me to keep my mouth closed until I know what I'm saying. And we don't do that. You know, we start babbling off and we're very verbose about things when we don't really know what we're talking about. But we start off. Well, Moses now is going to pass the responsibility to to Aaron. And Aaron is actually going to be... So when you thought of the Israelites, who would you think was in charge? You'd think Aaron, because he's the one that's telling us things. But Moses is behind the scenes, if you like, telling Aaron what God has commanded and what he should set forth. So in other words, you know, even though God is talking to you, you aren't really the one that stands up in front. And this is so often in, if you like, in ecclesial life, even in family life, that the real mover, the person that's really doing things, is not maybe the one that it appears that you see. Behind every good man is an even better woman, as it were, you know, that kind of helps to support and direct. And sure, the man is up there doing things, but actually the support that he receives is unbelievable. Quite often, if your wife is not around for a little while, you suddenly realize how much work is put in. You know, that I magically put my dirty clothes in the basket in the bedroom, and they appear in my drawers, you know, all kind of washed and folded, and they're there. And you don't, you know, you say that you don't remember that, hey, yes, somebody's done something with this. And the food that appears on the table, all these things happen, and you forget how they happen. Well, here, the children of Israel are going to listen, they're going to hear Aaron, but in fact, he's not really the one, the mover and shaker of doing these things. In fact, you know, it's kind of like God is the head, under God is Jesus, and under Jesus, a man and woman. And God has established status in our lives. Well, here, this status is not going to be really perceived as clearly and as distinctly by the people of Israel of the things that are going to be going on. Now, they come, we've established when Aaron dies, we've seen the fact that Aaron is now going to be the mouthpiece. God is going to speak to Moses. Moses is going to tell Aaron. And Aaron is then going to speak to the children of Israel and tell them what God wants them to do. Now, they come to Sinai in the third month. Exodus chapter 19, just, you know, what I'm trying to do here is to show you that these events with Nadab and Abihu took place very close to their exodus from Egypt. Chapter 19, verse 1, Exodus chapter 19 and verse 1, it says very clearly for us that in the third month, when the children of Israel were gone forth out of the land of Egypt, the same day came they unto the wilderness of Sinai. So they've come now into the wilderness of Sinai on the third month. Now they're going to stay there for 9 months. For the whole through that first year where they've come out and they're going to stay at Mount Sinai, and all sorts of events are going to take place when they are at Mount Sinai. Moses makes a total of 7 ascents up the mount. 7 times he goes up and comes down, and various things, you know, take place in this time frame. We're not going to look at all of them. Suffice to say that the first one is in chapter 19 at verse 3. We've seen that they've come to Mount Sinai. Well, at verse 3 is the first time Moses goes up the mount. Verse 3 reads, "And Moses went up unto God, unto the Lord, called unto him out of the mountain, saying, Thus shalt thou say to the house of Jacob, and tell the children of Israel." And then what is revealed, God reveals to Moses, and he goes down and tells Aaron, and Aaron tells the people. Now that's the first time that Moses ascends the mount. Now, these events that are going to come, you know, we're not going to look at all of them. The last descent, the 7th descent, if you like, I've just cited to you, is in Exodus chapter 34. In Exodus 34 and verse 29 is the last time that Moses comes down from the mount. It's the 7th time. You know, 7 times up and down, 7 times. So it starts in Exodus 19, verse 3, and the last one is in Exodus chapter 34, and verse 29. Not going to look at them all. I just cite that one to you so you can, you know, as you start to look through this and to say, huh, I don't know if he's talking the truth here. Did he really mean, you know. So that's what I would suggest is the first one, and that's the last one. And there are 7 times in between. If we had the time, we could look at them. But that's nearly all our subject. We've not come here to look at the ascents and descents of Moses at Mount Sinai. What we're trying to determine right now is to when the events of Nadab and Abihu dying, where are they relatively to the time that the children of Israel have come out of the land of Egypt? I hope you didn't kind of flip away too far from Exodus chapter 19, because the second ascent is in verse 8. Now we've seen the first ascent there is in verse 3. If you just scan down Exodus 19 to verse 8, this is what we read. And all the people answered saying, all that the Lord has spoken we will do. And Moses returned the words of the people unto the Lord. So he comes down and tells them what God has said. They say, okay. And he goes back and tells them what the people's answer was. Okay, so that's the second time that he goes back up the mountain. Now, on the third ascent, we have the Ten Commandments given. And this kind of third ascent that we're not going to take the time to really look at is starts in chapter, we're still in chapter 19, at verse 20, I think it is. Let me go down to verse, yeah, okay, here we are, verse 20. This is the third time Moses goes up. We've seen the first two. The third one, and the Lord came down upon Mount Sinai in the top of the mount, and the Lord called Moses up to the top of the mount, and Moses went up. So here Moses goes up. Now, this is chapter 19. Now, you all know what happens in Exodus chapter 20, don't you? All the Ten Commandments are given. So on this third ascent, the Ten Commandments, you can see them there. If you look at chapter 20, verse 3, thou shalt have no other gods before me, verse 4, and so on. As you go through chapter 20, the Ten Commandments are given on this third ascent when Moses goes up the mount. So that's what we've got in these, you know, these first few ups and downs. Now the descent is in verse 25 of chapter 19. I think it's verse 25. Verse 25. I think he descends. Was it verse 25? No, I'm in chapter 20. That's why. Verse 25 of chapter 19. Sorry. And Moses went down unto the people and spake unto them. Now, and that's when you have the Ten Commandments, which are recorded for us in chapter 20. So those are the first three ascents. It's the fifth time when Moses goes up the mountain when we have real trouble. This is when things really fall apart. I want you to flip over now to chapter 24. Exodus chapter 24, and specifically verse 9. Exodus chapter 24 and verse 9. Now, this is the fifth time that Moses is going to be asked to come up the mount. So, verse 9 of chapter 24, then went up Moses and Aaron, Nadab and Abihu, and 70 of the elders of Israel. So now you've got quite a crowd that are going up. Moses, Aaron, Nadab and Abihu, and 70 of the elders of Israel. So in other words, this little family group, Moses, Aaron, Nadab and Abihu, and elders, and some of the elders of Israel, are asked to go up into the mount, and up they go. Now, there is, if you like, a separation made. This little crew, don't all stay together. Look, go down to verse 13. You say in verse 13 that Moses rose up, and his minister Joshua, and Moses went up into the mount of God. So they don't all go up there. Verse 14 says, and he said unto the elders, tarry ye here for us until we come again unto you. And behold, Aaron and Hur are with you. If any man have any matters to do, let him come unto them. So you can see that now Moses and his minister Joshua go up, and the others are left. This separation is made. When you come to verse 18, right to the end of the chapter, it says, and Moses went into the midst of the cloud and got him up into the mount. And Moses was in the mount 40 days and 40 nights. So there, if you like, is the separation. The others are to stay there and to kind of look after things. And the instructions for the tabernacle now are given to Moses. If we were to read through, as we went into Exodus chapter 25 and on, the instructions for the fabrication of the tabernacle are given. And that would be from chapter 25, verse 1, and the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, and then the instructions for the tabernacle are given, right until you come to chapter 31, and we're not going to go there and look at all the instructions that are given, but just, you know, for notes, as it were, from 25 verse 1 to 35 verse 18, all the instructions for the tabernacle are given. Now, when the cat's away, the mice do play. Moses is up there receiving all these instructions. He's left Aaron and Hur. And if there's any trouble, those are the people that you can get in touch with, and they'll tell you what to do. Well, while he's away, all sorts of trouble breaks out. If you go over to chapter 32, and this is all in this time frame when Moses is away, you will see the wrinkles that take place, and actually who's involved with these problems that come to pass. Verse 1 of chapter 32. Exodus chapter 32 and verse 1. And when the people saw that Moses delayed to come down out of the mount, remember it said 40 days, 40 nights, the people gathered themselves together unto Aaron and said unto him, up, make us gods which shall go before. And that's for this Moses, we wot not what has happened unto him. That was in a nutshell. Hey, you know, he's gone up there. I don't know if he's coming back or when he's going to come back. In the meantime, make us some gods. We want some gods. Now, what do you think Aaron would do? I think Aaron has been a little bit inflated with his own importance. He has been the mouthpiece for Moses. And the people come to him and say, well, Moses has said, you know, Aaron will look after things while I'm away. And they come to him and say, make us gods. Well, he doesn't say, no, that's not right. He thinks, oh, well, you want me to do something for you? Oh, okay. You know, Moses is out of the picture right now. And I get the impression, you read between the lines, that Aaron just got carried away with the importance that was kind of, if you like, placed upon him. And while the cat's away, these all sorts of things are going to take place. We could look at New Testament examples and New Testament illustrations of this. I think the problems that arise when you are not receiving directly, if you like, the commands of God. They're coming through, if you like, another party who's interpreting them for you. I guess we have a whole Christian world which is not listening to God's word specifically that he's recorded it, but what somebody says about it. You know, whether it be the priests say of the Catholic Church, or whether it be Mary Baker Eddy, or whether it be Joseph Smith with his ideas. And this is the kind of thing that's happening now for the children of Israel. They want Aaron to kind of fabricate something for them while they're away. Now, is it Aaron and his boys? If you're still there in chapter 31, you know, is this Nadab and Abihu as well? Because when you look at verse 4 of chapter 31, to devise cunning works of gold and in silver and in brass. Whoops, no, I've missed a chapter out there, haven't I? I've skipped over too far. I went right to the end to look at when they were coming. We should be back in chapter 19, I'm sorry. Let me see, where are... No, it was 32, so I was always over into 33. It's funny, you know, this is... I got this Bible about 1990, I think it was. So the pages, I find, they kind of get... I guess it's greasy fingers. They tend to stick together a little bit on you. And I flip things over, and I think I'm on the other one page, and I'm not on the one page. I'm on another page altogether. So anyway... 32 is where we were at. Look down to verse 4. This is Aaron has received them at their hands. These are these earrings that they've broken off to make this whatever for them. And he fashioned it with a graving tool after he had made it a molten calf. And they said, you notice it says, and they said, this is supposed to be Aaron that's doing this. I'm wondering whether it's also Nadab and Abihu, that is he and his boys, that are up to these things. And they said, these be thy gods, O Israel, which brought thee out of the land of Egypt. And when Aaron saw it, he built an altar before it, and Aaron made proclamation and said, tomorrow is a feast to, you know, it's capital L-O-R-D. This is a feast to Yahweh. Totally got things mixed up and changed around. And there is real trouble in the camp. And you know what happens in the rest of this chapter when Moses comes down with the tables, the Ten Commandments, which God has written on. He breaks them down. He casts them out of his hand when he sees what's going on. And there is real anger from the Lord on what has gone on while Moses has been away. And there's major trouble. And this trouble is going to kind of percolate and is going to erupt again in the camp. The instructions for the dedication of the priesthood are given during this fifth ascent. You know, we said that it started back there at the fifth ascent, and we come right up here to chapter 32, looking at the events which have taken place. Well, during this time, if you go back to chapter 29, Exodus chapter 29, part of the instructions that Moses has received while he's in the mount for 40 days and 40 nights is the dedication of the priests, what they should do and what they shouldn't do. Chapter 29, Exodus chapter 29 and verse 1 reads, "And this is the thing that thou shalt do unto them to hallow them, to minister unto me in the priest's office." And then it goes on with a long list of instructions. Take one young bullock and two rams without blemish and unleavened bread and so on. But you can see what all these instructions in chapter 29 are about is the hallowing of the priests when they are to be set into their office to act as the priesthood. Same chapter. If you scan down to verse 35, Exodus chapter 29 and verse 35, it tells us, "And thus shalt thou do unto Aaron and to his sons, according to all things which I have commanded thee, 7 days shalt thou consecrate them." So we're told clearly, these are the instructions that are given to Moses. You're going to consecrate Aaron and his sons to the priesthood, and it's going to be for 7 days. Now, these instructions are also given in Leviticus, and we're going to look at chapter 10 there in a minute. But when was the first day? 7 days they were supposed to be dedicated. When was it, and when was the tabernacle set up to get a feeling for these events? We have kept telling you this is happening right near the beginning, after they've come out of the land of Egypt. We know they came in the third month to Sinai, and they're going to be there for a year. And Moses is going to be going up and down the mount 7 times, okay? So when is the tabernacle first set up? Because the consecration of the priests starts after the tabernacle is set up. And that's told for us in chapter 40. Exodus chapter 40 clearly tells us when the tabernacle was set up. So if you flip over to chapter 40, Exodus chapter 40, and I think it's verse 17, Exodus chapter 40, and verse 17 says, "And it came to pass in the first month, in the second year, on the first day of the month, that the tabernacle was reared up." Okay, so they've been at Sinai for a year. Now in the second year, on the first day of the first month, the tabernacle is reared up. So we're not long, are we? We haven't come out of Egypt. We're now at the second year. 1 year's gone now. We're into the second year. Right at the beginning of it, the instructions that have been given to make the tabernacle, they have made it, and the tabernacle is now set up. We've got 1 year since we left Egypt. Now, when the tabernacle is set up, the consecration of the priests start. Now, to get that, we're going to leave Exodus, and we're going to go over to Leviticus. And I want you to go to Leviticus chapter 8. To see how this fits in, because hopefully we've kind of got a feel for what the time frame is. Now, let's have a look at this consecration of the priests and the days. Remember, Moses was told 7 days they are to be consecrated, and you'll see what's going to happen on the eighth day, which is, you know, we've been at Sinai for 1 year, now we're into the second year. Verse 1 of Leviticus chapter 8. "And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Take Aaron and his sons with him, and the garments," you know, this is all the stuff they've made while they've been at Sinai, "and the garments, and the anointing oil, and a bullock for a sin offering, and 2 rams, and a basket of unleavened bread, and gather thou all the congregation together unto the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. And Moses did as the Lord commanded him, and he assembled and gathered the assembly was gathered together unto the door of the tabernacle of the congregation." So that's what God has asked him to do, and Moses does it, and the people come together. And now sacrifices are offered. We're not going to look specifically at all of them. I just want to scan down the chapter. Verse 23, so still in Leviticus chapter 8 and at verse 23, "And he slew it, And Moses took of the blood of it and put it upon the tip of Aaron's right ear and upon the thumb of his right hand and upon the great toe of his right foot. And he brought Aaron's sons, and Moses put of the blood upon the tip of their right ear and upon the thumbs of their right hand and upon the great toes of their feet, of their right feet. And Moses sprinkled the blood upon the altar round about. So Aaron and his sons are dedicated. Ears, you know, what they hear, what they do with their hands, and the way they go with their feet. They are to be dedicated to the Lord. Very clearly then that these are the sacrifices that are made. Now they are to stay in the tabernacle. Once this sacrifice has been offered, they've been had the blood put on. They're not to go wandering around. They are to stay in the tabernacle for 7 days. Verse 33, when you come down in this chapter, down to verse 33, it tells us, "And ye shall not go out of the door of the tabernacle of the congregation in 7 days, until the days of your consecration be at an end. For 7 days shall he consecrate you." Now very clearly it tells us how long they are to stay there. Verse 35, we'll just skip 34, verse 35 of chapter 8. "Therefore shall ye abide at the door of the tabernacle of the congregation day and night 7 days, and keep the charge of the Lord that ye die not, for so I am commanded." So now that's what Aaron and his sons are supposed to do at the command that God has given to Moses. Now, the boy's death is outlined for us in chapter 9. Leviticus chapter 9 and verse 1. "It came to pass on the 8th day." Okay, you can see that this is the second year. The tabernacle's reared up. The priests are consecrated. 7 days they have been in the tabernacle. "Now, it came to pass on the 8th day that Moses called Aaron and his sons and the elders of Israel." So, you know, this is the 8th day after the consecration which has been laid on the priests. Now, when you come down to verse 23 of chapter 9, Leviticus 9 and verse 23, "And Moses and Aaron went into the tabernacle of the congregation and came out and blessed the people, and the glory of the Lord appeared upon all the people. And there came a fire out from before the Lord and consumed upon the altar the burnt offering and the fat, which when all the people saw, they shouted and fell on their faces." So the power and the sanction of God in fire has been shown to the people here. Now that fire not only purifies, it also consumes that which is wrong and which is ungodly. So what happens? There's no real chapter breaks. You go to chapter 10 there. We've read to verse 23 and verse 24 of chapter 9. Look what it says in verse 1 of chapter 10. "And Nadab and Abihu, the sons of Aaron, took either of them their censer and put in thereof and put fire therein and put incense thereon and offered strange fire before the Lord." I forget what Simon's version said, but it's not, I guess they got the fire probably just from their little cook stoves. They hadn't gone to the altar of the Lord to get the fire to put the incense on. It was strange. It was not what God had commanded, which he commanded them not. "And there went out fire from the Lord and devoured them, and they died before the Lord." Now you can see when these events are taking place, we've tried to make this point that Aaron, all the way through the wilderness wanderings now, and Moses and his two remaining sons, this cloud is going to hang over them. The traumatic events which have taken place, and it gives you a different flavor, you know, for the things that happen and the things that the people say. These kids died with fire from the Lord because they did things which were inappropriate, things which they should not do. Now, it sounds kind of severe, doesn't it? It sounds as if this boy's death that we're going to be looking at here. I'm wondering, in these events here, the garments which they had been given to wear had been curiously wrought. They had been woven perfectly and everything was great about them. And I'm wondering in these events, if you can read into the fact that maybe they took their cloaks off. Maybe they took their, if you like, jackets or whatever you want to call them off and dispensed with them. Because after these events take place, Let's go down to verse 4 of chapter 10, Leviticus chapter 10. And Moses called Mishael and Elzaphan, the sons of Uzziel, the uncle of Aaron, and said unto them, Come near, carry your brethren from before the sanctuary of the Lord of the camp. And they went near, carried them in their coats out of the camp, as Moses had said. Now the fire of the Lord has kind of burnt these two guys. Now if they had their coats on, you'd think, well, they wouldn't have a nice jacket anymore, a nice coat, because they'd have been burnt. They were fried with this fire that came. Now had they dispensed with their jackets? We're going to see maybe what else they'd got up to while they, instead of doing as God had commanded them. Perchance that these jackets, they used them like a stretcher. They got these two charred carcasses here with the fire of the Lord has burnt them. And they kind of load them onto their coats, tunics, whatever you want to call them. And they use them to carry them out of the camp. Now, I don't know if they'd take their coats off, because you think if they were all burnt, they wouldn't be very good to carry somebody in a burnt piece of cloth that had been burnt so severely. But they're carried out in their coats. And there is to be no mourning. Aaron isn't to kind of be upset because his boys have died. See verse 6. Moses said unto Aaron, unto Eleazar, and unto Ithamar, his sons, Uncover not your heads, neither rend your clothes, lest ye die, and lest wrath come upon all the people. But let your brethren, the whole house of Israel, bewail of the burning which the Lord hath kindled. So they were not to be upset, not to die, not to be concerned about the death of his sons. If I remember rightly, Ezekiel, God says to him, your wife's going to die today, but don't get upset. Don't mourn and be sorry. Because what you're going to do is what the people of Israel are going to do when they're carried into captivity. They're not going to have time to mourn because of the death of their families or their relatives. Now, Moses says to Aaron, don't you mourn for the events that have taken place. These men, your sons, have died because of their rejection of God's commands to them. There was to be no mourning. I think it's in Ezekiel 24, actually, where Ezekiel is told not to mourn for his wife. Now, the next question, which we don't know for sure, but it's a strong suggestion, is were they a little bit, too much alcohol in them? They had a few little barley sandwiches or whatever they had, and they were not quite fully compos mentis in what they were doing, and that's perchance why they ended up doing what they did. Because in verse 9, still in Leviticus 10, well, I read verse 8 just for connection, and the Lord spake unto Aaron, saying, Do not drink wine nor strong drink, thou nor thy sons with thee, when ye go into the tabernacle of the congregation, lest ye die. It shall be a statute in you in forever, throughout your generations. Now, this is really just not a command just for priests. This is not something which they were to go. But really, this is a command for us. You need to be in control of your senses. You can't go off half-cocked to do things. You got to know what you're doing. Alcohol and drugs, they make you lose your inhibitions. You don't really do what you really want to do. And you often don't do silly things. And you're a lot more prone to, hey, let's go, and off you go. Well, this prohibition, when you are waiting on the Lord, when you're doing the Lord's work, you've got to have all your faculties about you. You've got to know what you're doing. You can't go off half-cocked about things. And this, I would suggest, is a command that God Sir makes to the priesthood, that they are to be in total control of what events when they're setting things forward. But they are not to have any of their faculties hampered by alcohol, strong drink. Doesn't mention drugs in there, but the same thing. In other words, what it is you've got to know what you're doing. The same kind of thing, God willing, we'll talk about at our lecture. Before you start to do things, you've got to count the cost. You've got to think, what am I getting into here? Whether it be for good or for bad, think about what you're doing. And if you have got your brains half-addled and your compos mentis is up the creek, hey, you're going to be liable to do things that are wrong. And this is probably exactly what happened to Nadab and Abihu. And this is why the prohibition is given here. Now, imagine the burden that's now placed on Aaron and his remaining two boys. all the sacrifices that are to be offered. There's not four boys now. There's only two boys left. So Aaron and his two boys have now got a total heavier responsibility upon them. And they've got to now carry this responsibility through the rest of the time that they're in the wilderness wanderings. That's the consequence of thoughtless actions and deeds. Now that's a lesson for me, and it's a lesson for you. If you don't think what you're doing, you're liable to get yourself into a deep mess. So be thoughtful about what you're going to say and what you're going to do, whether you're little or whether you're big. Make sure that what you're doing you have thought through, and that you've thought about what the consequences might be if I say this or do this. In other words, kind of look before you leap and have full control of all your faculties when you go into action. I would like to think that that's the lesson that we'd like to take from Nadab and Abihu, from the things which they did. Perchance their ability to really reason logically was upset, and they did things which they didn't really intend to do. But when much is responsibility is given to you and you have things which you're supposed to do, you can't just goof up. If you're the boss, you can't just say, well, it doesn't matter, does it? It does, because you are responsible for the direction that things are going. Now, these two boys had been consecrated. They had gone up the mount with Aaron, and they had seen the glory. They had been there when they'd come out of Egypt and seen the wonders that God had performed. But they were not prepared to accept that responsibility. Now, was drink involved? We don't know. But they seem to have renounced their responsibilities, and they suffered the consequences. We pray, our God, that the consequences which God has said are going to come upon this earth, these turning points which we are on the brink of, we would accept full responsibility for our actions. Can't make any excuses that we didn't know. And that by the grace of God, when he comes, he'd find us acceptable in his sight. Thank you.